Know the vibes! Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K26. It's myself, Mo Mutsi, and alongside me, as always, the one and only legendary coach, Mr. Brendan Sir. Coach, how you doing?
Mo, I am doing good. I'm almost doing as good as your Celtics.
Which is pretty damn good, right?
I am doing good, my friend. Thank you.
Yes, I love to hear it. And do you know who else is doing good?
There's a lot of people in this world besides you and me, but who else, my friend?
Fans of NBA 2K who don't yet have 2K, because today, or not today, last week, 2K and Rockstar Games announced that all of the on-call action of NBA 2K26 is coming to the GTA Plus Games library on consoles. So from March 10th, when you hear this episode, up until April 20th, GTA Plus members on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X or S can play the full NBA 2K26 experience as part of their benefits for being a GTA Plus member. Awesome. So, if that's you, make sure you go and get yourself a copy of NBA 2K26, because the NBA is getting real good. And in particular for me, a fan of the Boston Celtics, it's fantastic.
I didn't think we would start this early in the show, but go ahead. You've been waiting months for this, my friend. That's good.
So. I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought I'd be waiting until October. I'd be waiting until October.
I think that even last week when it was rumored that he's going to come, the naysayers, as we like to call them here in the States, I'm sure you have a better, more articulate term.
Wasteman.
In the UK. they were saying, oh, it's not going to work. He shouldn't do it. They're going to break up their continuity. I think they're 2-0.
All these people, coach, all of these people, since 2017, when Jason Tatum was drafted, they all have this stuff to say. Oh, can Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum play together? Should the Celtics break up the two J's? And then they go and win the championship, right? And they're still questioning it. These are two guys that won a championship together. They've been together their entire NBA careers. And you're questioning the chemistry of these two guys who have been to the top of the mountain. Meanwhile, all the other people in the league, Kawhi and Paul George team up, they can't get it done. You know what I mean? All these other duos and trios and all these other pairings, they can't figure it out. Tatum and Brown, they've done it. And you're damn sure they can do it again. So, 298 days after tearing his right Achilles against the New York Knicks in the NBA playoffs last season, Jason Tatum returned in a 20-point victory over the Dallas Mavericks. Now, at first, coach, it didn't look too good. You know, he shot an air ball, he tried to get up for a dunk, and he couldn't make the dunk, and he wasn't looking like Jason Tatum. But it's one of those things where half of the sport is physical, yes, but half of it is mental. Because once he got a putback dunk to get him on the scoreboard, immediately after that, he looked like the Jason Tatum we all know and love. He was hitting step back threes, he was knocking down catch and shoots. He was doing his thing. He finished with 15 points, 12 rebounds, and 7 assists. So talk about having the confidence in his body to go and snag those 12 boards. You know, if you're a player who's kind of got an injury and you're not feeling 100%, you're not going to go and try and grab 12 rebounds. You're just, all right, if the ball comes to you, you're going to get it. He's going up there and getting it. He's playing in all facets of the game. And then tonight, against the Cavs, he went on the road, 20 points in a big-time win. They won by, 10, 11 points against the Cavs. The Cavs were making a comeback, and he hit a three with a couple minutes left to seal the victory for the Celtics. He's looking good. It will take him a while before he looks great again. Both games, he shot 6 of 16, which is natural. I personally was saying before the game against the Mavs, I don't care what he plays like, because the fact that he's playing less than a year after a horrible Achilles injury is a miracle. I mean, people say like modern science and it's evolved so much, so on and so forth. No one thought this. If we go back to the playoffs last year, everyone thought, all right, well, the Celtics will take a year off, just like the Indiana Pacers have. They lost their star player and they've still got their secondary star in Pascal Siakam, but they're at the bottom of the East. The Celtics lost their star player, and their second star player, Jaylen Brown, has them in second place in the Eastern Conference. And now the trade deadline ended, the buyout market ended, everyone's made their rosters. And the Celtics just pull out an all-NBA level talent who now has 16 games left in a regular season to ramp things up before we get to the playoffs? Because first of all, it was going to be, oh, if he returns, it's going to be for the playoffs, if the Celtics are in the playoffs. Now, he's returned to the second seed. He can get comfortable and then get back to the playoffs where he's an absolute beast. Coach, what did you see in Tatum's first two games?
First thing I want to do is I want to give kudos to the entire Celtics organization, the way they handled this. It was a masterclass, in my opinion, in how to, you know, bring a player back from a devastating injury. And I thought they'd never... Brad Stevens has a great term that he uses when he speaks at Coaching U, and it's usually regarding young people that want to get in coaching, but after like 1 year, they're ready to be a head coach. And Brad says, in life, you can't skip steps. And in rehab, you can't skip steps. And I think their medical people, the therapists, all those people, the trainers, the player development guys, everyone was involved in this. It was an amazing team effort. And the biggest thing, you mentioned it earlier, the biggest thing is he knew physically he was okay for the last month, which is great. They knew it, that he was ready. Now it becomes mental. And that's the biggest thing, that doubt. I also heard him say, which I love, his honesty, his anxiety, that he had anxiety coming back. And he was nervous and scared a little bit. And I think that's the vulnerability that I love when athletes are real with you, or anyone, a performer, you know, a singer, whatever. They tell you what they really feel. And unless you've ever gone through something like that, none of us know. None of us know. So I think, and I want to say something. I know it sounds like someone, but Joe Mazzulla, I just can't give enough props to this guy. The way he has handled everything with his team is coming back so much more. It's not that they're adding Jason Tatum. They've developed so many players on their squad that never played before.
Yep. Think about it. Think about it, coach. Got rid of Porzingis, Holiday, Horford, because they had to get under the tax, right? And Luke Kornet, they couldn't re-sign. And not only that, at the trade deadline, they had to get off Anthony Simons, who was playing elite basketball for them.
Five players.
So they've not only done it once, they've done it twice to get under the first apron as well. And they're still relentless. And that speaks, as you say, to coaching, because we've got guys like Jordan Walsh, Baylor Shireman, you've got Hugo Gonzalez, you know, the rookie. They've got Cater playing at a level that is, if we talk about value, right?
Incredible.
All right. If we talk about value, okay. And this is, someone could clip this and make me look ridiculous, but you just got to stay with me on this, right? If we talk about value, right? The most valuable player should be their contract compared to their on-court performance. Absolutely, if you're on a max contract, it is the expectation you play like a superstar and you're top 10 in scoring and so on and so forth.
100%.
Namias Keita, I have to look up how much money he's making.
I think it's 2.5, just off the top of my head.
He signed a 3-year, $7 million contract with the Celtics, right? So this season, he's making $2.3 million.
Okay.
Spot on, coach. And he is performing at the rate of an elite starting, not an elite, like he's a go-to option, but his rebounding, his shot blocking, his defense, his screens. He is outperforming his contract more than anybody I can think of in the NBA right now. I don't think in boxing, they say pound for pound. I think dollar for dollar, there's no one. And when we talk about most improved player, I'm putting Kaya's name in the ring.
Yeah, and also I'm going to put him on my my second team all defense.
Wow.
Think about that.
Mm.
And it happens to players like this. I had Ben Wallace in Detroit, where the year before he had three rebounds, 4 points a game, 19 minutes average in Orlando. We got him. And then over next 4 or 5 years, the guy became defensive player of the year, all defense, led the league in rebounding, Hall of Fame player. This kid, I'm not saying he's going to become a Hall of Fame player. He's going to be a starter in this league. And here's the brilliance of Mazzulla. They get a terrific trade deadline move, getting Vucevic, I'm a big fan of.
Mm.
And he says, no, he's not a starter. he's my sub because I need this guy for rebounding and defense. Mm-hmm. He'll set the tone. Now, when Vooch comes in, he'll make shots. What a sub, second unit player.
Yep.
And brilliant coaching.
The Celtics identified Cage's talent. They got him out of Sacramento. I feel bad for our former co-host on the show, Mr. Scott Perry, because he could really do with a center like Namias Cage on his team, right? And the Kings had him on the roster. And do you know how the Kings had Namias Cage on their team?
No, sir.
When he was working for the Kings and the Knicks wanted to hire him, the Knicks had to send the Kings a second round pick. And that second round pick turned into Namias Cage. So how about that?
Let's not bring that up.
Yeah. Life is funny.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite guys. I love
he's my most improved player this season.
I think that's a great call.
Yeah. I think him, Ryan Rollins as well, is another player who needs to be in consideration for most improved player. There's a lot of guys. And that's what I think the spirit of the most improved player award should be. It shouldn't be a lottery pick who's now on their progression, how we would expect them to progress. No. It's not the guy in Portland who's getting a million free throws a game, who everyone wants to call the most improved player. These are the guys on a minimum contracts fighting for their place to stay in the NBA who transform themselves into valuable starting caliber players that are integral. Well, not Ryan Rollins because Milwaukee suck, but Namias Cage, integral to the second seed in the East.
That's what I was going to say. I like Rollins a lot. Their team's not any good. This is now, maybe after tonight, one game behind the Pistons as best record in the East, the Boston Celtics.
Let's talk about the Pistons for a sec, Coach. Let's talk about the Pistons for a sec, because you might start getting a little concerned about Detroit, because they've been the runaway one seed in the East all season long. Right now, they're down 20 points to Miami as we record this. We've got to wait to see how that goes. They lost their game against Brooklyn. They lost to the Spurs, which is, you know, a potential finals matchup. You lose to the Spurs. They lost to the Cavs. So this could be a four-game losing streak. Osar Thompson out with injury. How are you looking at the Pistons right now? Because, you know, there's, 15, 16, 17 games left for most teams before the playoffs come around. That's not a lot of time, and now's not the time to be going on a losing streak.
Well, we talked about, we gave JB and we've given Cade tons of flowers, okay? And Duren. We like Duren. Mm-hmm. But we also said, and I think last show you talked about, how far can you go in the playoffs if you haven't had any success in the playoffs? And that's because there is a progression, and you're right on that. This is bringing it to roost, so to speak. I'm really concerned about them. You can't advance in the playoffs with two players. Basically, two stars.
And so I'm assuming you're saying Duren is the second star.
He's a new star, so to speak.
But here's the thing with Duren, though, is he is the beneficiary of Cade Cunningham. He doesn't create his own shots. He simply finishes plays that they set the table for. But when I say a star is you need multiple players who can create their own offense. We were just talking about the Celtics. If Tatum can't get a bucket, Jaylen Brown can. But you can't give the ball to Duren and just expect him to go and score.
But you can have stars as far as being able to rebound and defend and that and be physical. And he's the guy that sets the picks for the guy. But I mean, two all-star players, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And the other guys, you know, there's really no one there that you say it's an elite guy. They're all guys that are really doing a good job in their roles, which is why they have a great record and a terrific, masterful coaching job by JB. But as we've said all along, matchups are key. Home court advantage comes to play. It comes into play. We have four teams in the East that are vying, and I could see any one of the four advancing, including Cleveland. I could. New York, I can see. I can see Boston, and I can see Detroit. But who you match up with, first, second, third round, that's the key.
Well, I just finished doing the Knicks versus Lakers game on Prime. And
what'd you do wrong to get that game?
Supposed to be prime time, you know, national TV, early tip off, and two big name teams. The New York Knicks, now, I couldn't say this on the air. This is what I like to do. I finish my show on TV where I'm responsible, and then I come here and tell you guys the truth. They played on Sunday morning in LA. Their last game was in Denver on Friday, which means Saturday, day off in Los Angeles, Saturday night in Los Angeles. I'll let you figure out the rest, because every one of their threes fell short. They could not hit a shot to save their life up until the final 4 minutes of the game, when it was too late to make a comeback. And I don't know. I just think at this crucial stage of the season, everything's heightened, right? You know, you're a game and a half ahead of Cleveland. You're 2.5 games behind the Celtics. Unless you're comfortable just being the third or fourth seed, every game should be played with a must-win intensity. It's right. Not like they were playing the second night of a back-to-back. It's not like you're playing in the altitude of Denver. You went to the altitude of Denver and put up your second highest points total of the season. I want to know why, against a LeBron-less Lakers team, they couldn't show up. And credit to the Lakers, because their defense looked fantastic today. I never thought I'd say that this season, but their defense looked real good.
I think it can happen, though, when a guy like LeBron doesn't play. Mm-hmm. You think this is, it's a mental thing, Mo, even those guys. I know we would like to say those guys were hanging out. You know, I think the game, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, it was about a 12:30 game LA time, I think, right about that.
And you had the clocks change night before.
Yeah. So I think, you know, but I think the mindset is a big thing.
Yeah.
And the Lakers have been terrible lately, in my opinion.
Yep.
So this was I think this was something, maybe almost a test for the Lakers a little bit, more than the Knicks.
The Lakers have been terrible against any team above 500 all season.
Yep.
Like 19 of their 25 losses have come from teams above 500, right? They just beat up on bad opponents, and that's how they've got up to where they are in the standings. I believe they're sixth right now. For the Lakers, this is what stood out to me, though. DeAndre Ayton started the game with ferocious intensity, couple block shots on defense, a nice alley-oop from Luka on offense. But then there are some things that happen that I think are amazing. And then some things that happen, I just think, what are you doing? Like, there was one possession, he blocks Kat. And the Lakers go off in transition, and Kat is busy complaining to the referee. And DeAndre is just walking back up the court. And Kat gets back. Kat has time to complain to the referee for about 10 seconds and still gets back on defense before DeAndre Ayton's even got to half court. Luka is looking around saying, where's my big man? I need a screen. And he's just not there. And I'm like, you could double your scoring if you simply ran rim to rim on every possession and ran as hard as you could. So things like that, like, he started with great intensity. Marcus Smart was fantastic for them defensively.
Yep.
And then without LeBron, I feel like it unlocks Austin Reeves. Like, yeah. Austin Reeves plays well when LeBron's playing, but when it's just him and Luka and there's no LeBron, he gets more touches, he gets more opportunities, and he's just more aggressive. Since the All-Star break, Austin Reeves, in my opinion, has really struggled in the first half of games. You know, against the Nuggets the other night, he had a horrible first half and he started scoring a little bit in the third. Today, the first four possessions, the first possession, Austin Reeves corner three, he gets fouled, three free throws. Next possession, Austin Reeves corner three. Next possession, Austin Reeves step back jumper. Next possession, Austin Reeves tries to pull up a mid-range jumper and it misses. He was trying to force the issue from early on in this game. When you've got Luka and LeBron and Austin Reeves, he doesn't get a chance to do things like that and settle into the game so early. So, you know, some LeBron fans were messaging me after the game saying, why are you hating on LeBron? I said, listen, this isn't hating on anyone. This is just the facts of the reality that we live in.
I think Austin Reeves and Doncic, I think they have a real friendship, a genuine friendship there. They really like each other. They play, you know, they have fun with each other, but they complement each other too. Neither one of them guards well, but they can really score. I mean, it's hard to get.
Luka and Kyrie got to the finals together.
You get 60 points between those guys on a given night.
Yeah, they average 56 combined.
Okay, that's pretty impressive. I'll tell you that Pelinka made a terrific pickup.
Oh, yeah.
Kennard. I think Kennard was a terrific pickup.
50% three-point shooter.
That's
unbelievable.
What I mean.
And, like, you look at Luke Kennard and you think he's just a three-point shooter. He does a lot of little other things that, you know, he's a good rebounder for his position. He can hustle a little bit on defense. He can move off the ball, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's not just the shooting. He adds some intangibles as well to this team.
No, and so I think that was a great pickup, and it gives him a really good offensive guard. Luka needs people that, when he's double teamed, he can spray the ball to, and both with Reeves and Kennard in the game together, you got two terrific 3-point shooters. So I think that's a quiet move by Pelinka. Takes a lot of heat, but I think Rob, you know, is doing a solid job. But I tell you what, Their center position's a problem.
Yeah, because I wanted to say this. On that Mavericks team that went to the finals, you had 48 minutes of great production with either Daniel Gafford or Derek Lively. What right. do they all do? They block the shot, protect the rim, protect the paint, and then they sprint down to the rim on the other side exactly. to get a lob, or they come and screen for Luka and they roll hard to the hoop. So the defense has to respect the roller. Jackson Hayes does that to a higher degree.
He doesn't have the talent of the guys that you mentioned, but yeah, he plays hard with
it.
But energy.
He does it more than DeAndre Ayton. But if DeAndre Ayton you know, Dwight Howard was in the stands at Staples Center today watching the Lakers Knicks game. And I said it on the broadcast, if I'm DeAndre Ayton, I would just sit down and watch prime Dwight Howard in that pick and roll offense in Orlando just get dunk after dunk after dunk, rebound everything, put everything back in the hoop. You've got the athleticism, you've got the height, you've got everything. And
JJ played with Dwight, you know?
Yep.
Maybe they should sign Dwight.
I think that Dwight Howard could right now be the best center on the Lakers roster.
The guy's got a body that's ridiculous. I mean, the guy's incredible.
Yeah. He could be the best center on the Lakers right now. Yeah, and he's not played in, 2 years? In any capacity.
I think that's a huge move. That's how this league is tough. And I'm telling you, the last 20 games, you'll see stuff happening that you'll shake your head at. And you saw it last night with Brooklyn, who had lost, I think, 10 games in a row, into Detroit down 23 and end up winning the game. You know, and you go, why does that happen? Well, the game, and I thought JB, to his credit, said, the way we got to the record we got is not the way we finished our game today. He didn't go crazy or anything. Very mature, sat there and said, hey, that's not who we are, guys. But now tonight, I'm not sure what they are either, you know?
Yeah. I think it's a little concerning for the Pistons, obviously missing Asar Thompson quite a lot.
I'm waiting for you to now say the Pistons got into Miami and probably at about 1 a.m. last night, and there's nothing like Saturday night in South Beach, buddy.
I want to go back to the Knicks for a sec, Coach. I want to go back to the Knicks, right? Because I'm a young man, but sometimes I feel like the brain inside my brain is 50 years older than it is, because I look at Karl-Anthony Towns, and a lot of people criticize Shaquille O'Neal for the way he talks about guys like Karl-Anthony Towns, but in my head, if I'm Karl-Anthony Towns and I'm playing the Lakers, I'm walking into the arena saying, I'm getting 50 today. DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes are going to guard me. Huh?
Correct.
The Lakers were able to run lineups with no center on the floor and Karl-Anthony Towns didn't punish them. You have all of the talent in the world, but you just want to park up behind the three-point line. And there were some of the threes he shot were abysmal. Jackson Hayes got his hand up and you're like four steps out from the three-point line and you just want to fire off a three. Come on, man. Get to the block and go to work.
And that's what I think Shaq gets upset at him for. Because the guy's big on top of it. He's bulky.
Yeah. Because
he has no post-up game at all.
But he has no post-up game, but these guys can't defend the post either. You know what I mean?
You have to go into the post to defend it.
Yeah, exactly. I get it. Like, all right, cool. Yeah. If I'm facing Ivica Zubac, right? He's stronger than Karl-Anthony Towns. So maybe you can't get a lot of joy in the post-ups.
Yeah.
You're being guarded by Jackson Hayes, brother. You're being guarded by DeAndre Ayton. Like, what are we doing here, man? And then when he gets smalls on him, he either wants to shoot a fadeaway or a face up and then try to drive by. Like, this is my thing with the Knicks. If Karl-Anthony Towns did that, he could get an extra 10 points a game. Like, I get Mike Brown wants the team to shoot a lot of threes, so on and so forth. But guess what? This sport is, you know, a great coach once told me, basketball is the most simple sport in the world. It's only made complicated by the players. And I think about this a lot, because if Karl-Anthony Towns just goes to the block and you make it a point of emphasis from the beginning and he starts working down in the block, bodying guys in the block, putting his shoulder through their chest, getting to the hoop, getting fouled, they're going to have to send a double. And guess what happens when they send a double? Mikal Bridges is open. Jalen Brunson is open. OG Anunoby is open. Josh Hart is open. It's so simple. And I don't understand why these teams can't recognize it. And I get it. All these nerds are going to come and tell me, oh, but threes are more valuable than twos. Listen, the game is played on the court. The game is not played on an Excel spreadsheet. Okay? You can tell it really irritates me. Because if I was 7 foot tall like Karl-Anthony Towns, that is all I would do.
Mo, let me ask you something. We haven't really spoken about this. So you have a lot of nerds that message you? are they UK nerds or are they from my side? Are they US
nerds? I shouldn't use the term nerd in a bad way because I consider myself a basketball nerd. When I say nerd in that context, I'm just referring to people from all around the world, Coach. Don't understand basketball, the sport. They understand basketball, the algorithm. They understand basketball, the math equation. And there's a scarily large chunk, and it's not just fans, by the way. There are people who work for NBA teams.
I was just going to say, it sounds like the analytics people that work in the league.
There are people who work for NBA teams. You could ask them to shoot
all my friends
layup,
in the league that are analytics people. The hell with you. I don't care.
No, some analytics people are great. Okay.
They're all good people. They just don't know the game as well as you do.
But some people, you can blend basketball knowledge with analytics for optimal results. Okay. Some people can just rely on their basketball knowledge and some people just rely on the analytics, but you need a middle ground. Now, if you're going to look at the NBA and say, all right, but we're going to shoot 53s and Karl-Anthony Towns is the best shooting big man of the last 20 years. So we're going to win these games on 3-point shooting. Cool. In theory, fantastic. On your numbers, fantastic. On the spreadsheet, fantastic. In real life, I'm walking into an arena and the guys that are guarding me as Jackson Hayes, DeAndre Ayton, Maxi Kleber, and you think that I'm not going to the block and bullying those guys that are all smaller than me and weaker than me? Come on, man. Come on now.
So you, a very, very famous executive from one of your favorite teams in the Eastern Conference, called me the other day and said to me, Coach, how many threes would you have your team shoot a game if you were still coaching in the league? That was a very unusual question, you know, for me, because I just design my offense and I want my best players to shoot. I never think of it in terms of that. But I knew that, and I said, I think most teams are trying to get 40. But I said, my biggest thing is, how good are my shooters?
Yep.
Not how, there's teams though, they just want you to shoot 40 to 50. They don't care if you guys can't shoot. My thing is, if I got good shooters, I have no problem if the good shooters are the ones shooting it.
Mm-hmm. I think if I'm answering that question, I don't have a set number. Play the game and the game dictates itself, right? So if I have a big that can score on a post and he's having success and they're not double teaming him and he's scoring every time down, he's scoring or getting fouled, scoring or getting fouled. I don't care if we don't shoot a three for 5 minutes and all the possessions go through him. Why? The other team's big men rotation will all be in foul trouble. We'll be in the bonus from early on in the quarter, right? And then naturally, the game will open up and we'll find those threes. You come into a basketball game saying we have to shoot 45 threes or more. That's not a recipe for success. Now, I know that as a fan of the Boston Celtics, who are notorious for their high volume of three-point shooting, here's the difference. As you said, number one, they have very good three-point shooters. Okay, sure. That's number one. But number two, if you look at how they generate their threes, it's not coming down the court and we're just pulling up, taking the first shot available. They are manufacturing high quality looks, turning down good shots for great shots. We're going to drive, we're going to kick to the corner, we're going to swing to the wing, then we're going to drive it again, then find the open shooter on the weak side. That's very different to what a lot of teams do. All right, Carl, you go set a screen for Brunson. Brunson, if they throw two defenders at you, hit Carl and he's going to pop a three. In my opinion, that's just lazy offense. So if we're designing an offense for an NBA team, I don't have a set number of we've got to shoot this many threes.
Yeah, I'd never had that question asked of me in all my career. And now Cleveland shot 45 today and Boston shot 38, but both teams have terrific shooters.
Yeah, but Cleveland shot ice cold to start that game.
Yes, I know. But Kenny Atkinson is one of the guys that loves shooting threes. And if you notice, Jordan Ott, his assistant last year, who's the head coach of our Phoenix Suns, he is really shooting a ton of threes also. So philosophy-wise, James Borrego at New Orleans shoots a ton of threes. There's certain guys that just are all in on it, which is fine. Yeah. I'm just not that way. I'm more like you.
Yeah.
So feel good about yourself.
Here's my numbers that I care about, right? If I'm coaching an NBA team. And this is just me, and I'm not an NBA coach, but here's the numbers I care about.
You are sometimes, though. Yeah.
What percentage of loose balls did we try and save? How many good quality screens did we set? How many charges did our small guys take?
Mm-hmm.
How many physical fouls did we commit to deter guys from coming into our paint?
Ooh, now you're speaking my love language.
These are the numbers that I would personally care about. The offense, cool. If you want to shoot 23s, if you want to shoot 53s, whatever. But I would rather have 20 wide open threes than 50 contested threes.
100%.
Because we're going on the numbers that we've got to shoot a high volume of threes, but what are the quality of those looks looking like? Yeah. Like, when are they being taken in a shot clock? How are they being manufactured? Who's guarding them? Where from the three-point line are they being taken? So all of these things lean into the factor of, if Karl-Anthony Towns starts being more assertive, I believe the Knicks can go very far. If he plays like he did tonight against the Lakers in the playoffs, I don't think that they have a chance.
Good call.
Because it's a game where Jalen Brunson's struggling, right? He didn't have a good start. It's a game where Mikal Bridges didn't show up. It's a game where OG's struggling a little bit on offense. Carl, this is your job, man. Come on now. Like, I would get it if you're being guarded by a good defensive big, but coach, can you name for me the five best post-up defenders in the NBA?
That's a great question.
Can you name five guys who are good at defending the post in the NBA? I was covering the Lakers-Nuggets game the other night, and there was a stretch, I believe, in the third or fourth quarter where JJ Redick told Marcus Smart to go and guard Nikola Jokic. And I said to my co-commentator, I said to him, he goes, what's JJ doing? Why has he got a guard guarding Jokic? I said to him, you know Marcus
smart
Smart?
It's a very smart move.
I said, Marcus Smart's the best post-up defender on that roster. He goes, what? I said, I've watched this guy. I'm not going to start the game with him on the other team center, but I've watched him get switched onto Embiid in the playoffs and hold his own. He's a good post-up defender. Now,
very strong, and he's get leverage, smaller guy against a bigger guy.
But it's a worrying place to be where one of the best post-up defenders in your league is a 6'4" guard.
Yeah.
Jackson Hayes ain't gonna answer for Jokic. DeAndre, and he left the game after 4 minutes, but like that's my rant for the day, I guess. No. I do it every year. I do it all the time. But that's just the way I look at it. Like, people criticize Shaquille O'Neal, they call him a hater and they say he's just criticizing guys, but it's because he knows how simple this game can be.
Yeah, Shaq's a dear friend and has been for forever. And one of the things since he came in the league in 92, one of the things about Shaq is he has a vision, like I do, of how the game should be played. It was always played through him because he was the most dominating player physically I ever saw at the center position, dominating. Like, Kareem was maybe the best center offense. The Dream Shake was incredible with Hakeem, but this guy was a force. I mean, he would hurt you in the post, Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
But so he thinks that everyone should play the way he played. And he just doesn't like it when guys, even Joel Embiid, he doesn't like that Joel Embiid plays away from the basket, never posts up. So I think that's what we see with Shaq, which is fine. That's his philosophy.
I'm not against, because I think Shaq is more completely against big men shooting threes. He hates big men shooting threes. He said that in the interview I did with him, if you want to go and check the episode. I'm not against big men shooting threes. I'm against big men exclusively shooting threes.
Of course.
Do you see the difference? All right, I'm going to go to the post 2-3 times in a row. I'm going to hit a jump hook. Cool. Now you're going to bite on the fake. I'm going to hit the up and under. Cool. You're going to foul me. Cool. I'm going to hit the free throw line. Now I'm a pop for a three. Do you know what I mean? Like, now I'm a pop for a three. And you just have some variety in your offense. But
So my thing in constructing an offense, and I know we're going a little, is that
like this.
Now the first thing I'm doing is, 90% of the teams in the NBA switch on pick and rolls now because they don't want to be embarrassed by a three-point shooter screening and popping behind the three if they helped on Luka Doncic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what they've done is they've gone to switching. Well, when teams go to switching, there's a mismatch. And so when there's a mismatch, if I got a point guard guarding my center, I'm rolling him right in the middle of the 3 second lane, and I'm going to posterize a guard versus my center.
Yep.
And I think that's Stan Van Gundy was the first guy to really do that with Dwight Howard. Dwight never posted up because he had no offensive game as far as
Oh, he wanted to post up, though. That's what I respect. So what he did is he wanted
Stan to use pick and rolls and post him up in the middle of the lane, not outside to sit. Because as you know, in the NBA, we have a 16-foot lane as opposed to college, 12-foot. Mm-hmm. And so you're really away from the basket if you don't have shots. And I think that's what, you know, he did, which was really incredible. That's what I would be doing with my post guys. Starting them in a screen, try to see if there's a mismatch. Try to see if we get an advantage. And actually, crazy as it sounds, when Phoenix went to the finals, they did a terrific job, Monty Williams, of setting CP3 setting, coming off of Ayton's screen and rolling for lobs.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really successful with it.
And the unspoken factor, and Mitchell Robinson talks about this a lot, is when you engage your big men like that and you just throw them nice, easy lobs, they work harder on the boards. They work harder on the defensive end. Because for a big, sometimes you run up and down the court 10 times in a row and don't touch the ball once. You run up and down the court 20 times in a row and don't touch the ball once in this NBA. So engaging your bigs, yeah, I get it. Finding a three-point shot is worth more points than a two-point shot. But there's the intangible things in the game, the game within the game, that people aren't factoring in.
Yeah, this is a great discussion. I love this. Good way to go, coach. Nice job. I love
that. I'll come and speak at coaching you in Vegas this summer.
You know what? We'll do that.
We have to do it on the first day that I land in Vegas, because after the first night in Vegas, I can't promise I'll show up.
I'll check with my partner. You better get there early, buddy. We're only having our speakers this year from 8:30 to 1 p.m. And so I'm not sure you'll even be up to function at 8:30 in the morning.
That's interesting. In constructing a modern NBA offense, it's not saying to not shoot threes, not to take away the threes. And it's not, we want to take a bunch of mid range, but it's, I think what I'm saying is you find the pressure points in the game. Now, if 100%. I'm playing against a team who has good, solid bigs, I'm not going to go and spam post-ups the whole time, am I? I'm going to bring them out of the lane. But I feel like a lot of teams, they have their game plan and they don't really adjust it through the course of 82, which is normal. But when you get to the playoff series, now you have to make adjustments every single game.
Every game.
You now have a team of guys who have played 82 games the same way. It's a lot harder for them to adjust the matchup. I don't know if it's, I've not checked, like, examined it, right? But I feel like when I was younger and I was watching the NBA, teams would make more adjustments for regular season matchups than they do now.
So I'm going to tell you the inside scoop. So we were so successful in Detroit because most teams back then, when they got to the playoffs, as you stated, they now had to change their style of play. We played playoff basketball 82 games. Mm-hmm. That was our style of play. There was no adjustment, nothing. We played defense. We rebounded. We were physical. We took hard fouls. We ran offense to get our best player shots. There was no adjustment.
Yeah, but you say that, coach, but the one thing about you, when I'm talking to people around the basketball world and, you know, they say, oh, so, you know, BJ left the show, and I'm like, yeah, I do it with Coach Sir now. The first thing that everyone says is that Coach Sir had the most thorough scouting reports on every opponent for every game. So you're saying we play the same way for every game is not what I'm saying, playing every game the same way. Do you get what I'm saying?
Oh, no. That's but a I'm bit saying, of a yeah, no, I, that nowadays is what one of my NBA coaches that speaks at Coaching U says. They've designed the game so it's basketball coaching for dummies. Anyone can do it. The way the game's played now. What I meant was we prepared every game, individual scouting reports. Our game plan changed for every single opponent. Our style of play never changed.
Yeah.
In other words, we played hard defense. We played great offense. That stayed the same. How we would strategize if we were playing MJ and BJ with the Bulls and Pippen, and we attacked how we were going to attack them, just like if we were going to play Magic and Kareem with the Lakers. Every game we attacked differently who we were going to take out that game.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way to play.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes it's frustrating, but don't get me wrong. Some of these coaches do amazing things with their teams, but it does feel oftentimes like this is how we play, no matter what is going on.
I totally agree.
And I am not a fan of that. And I get it. You just want to get through the 82 games, get to the playoffs. But then when you get to the playoffs, you see who can adjust and who can't adjust.
Well, we're going to see 16 teams get to the playoffs and 14 don't. So
yep.
I think you should change that as a philosophy. I agree with you 100%. Yeah.
We got a couple in the play-in. Do you know the Atlanta Hawks are on a 6-game win streak? The Miami Heat are on a 4-game win streak. The Charlotte Hornets are 7-3 in their last 10. So the play-in picture in the East is looking exciting. Over in the West, the Phoenix Suns, now without Dylan Brooks. The Warriors without Stephen Curry. Portland Trail Blazers kind of hanging around the 10th seed. And the LA Clippers, who have been pretty good since Thanksgiving. Maybe the Clippers make it out of the play-in spots there.
I looked at this earlier before the show. And I predicted teams 9 and 10 will be 7 and 8 in both sides.
By the end of the season or
yep,
in the play-in?
By the end of the season. You know what I'm saying? I think Atlanta's playing great. And I think they're capable of beating anyone. I mean, Jalen Johnson, man. Wow.
No, forget that, coach. Can we? I don't know if we've talked about this yet. Jonathan Kuminga.
Well, he's on the Warriors, right? Oh, no? He's not on the Warriors? No, Kuminga, what a change of scenery has done for this young man. Yeah.
No, I don't even think it's a change of scenery. I think it's being allowed to play basketball again.
No, I'm being nice. I'm being nice. These are my brethren. The coaches are my brethren, okay?
Yeah.
No, I'm happy the young man's getting a chance to play, and he's really doing a great job.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. He's only played 2 games, and he's a game-time decision for the next game.
But I'll tell you what, they got a good squad. They got chemistry on that team, too. That's what I like about them. And they guard you. Mm-hmm. But Jalen Johnson, man, he's a monster.
He's an all-star. All-star for a reason.
He's an all-star, and I'm gifting him a selection on the USA Olympic team.
Wow.
That's how good I think he is.
Yep. That team's going to be pretty good. We've got Cooper Flagg, but Kate Cunningham. We've got Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Well, I don't know if they'll pick Jaylen Brown again, but there's going to be some guys. It's not all over yet for the USA. We've got a lot of debate. This is another thing I was looking at, you know, because
we don't have bigs right now. We don't have bigs. That's
Jaylen Duren.
That's just like...
The USA went with Tyson Chandler as their only big to the Olympics in 20... Which year was that? 2016? 2012? Yeah.
No, later. That was not a good...
Old Tyson Chandler. I was looking at this, though, because for the second year in a row, the draft is around the corner, and there's not that many international players that are high up in the draft. You know, we went through a period where the European guys were taken at the top, and now it's kind of cooled off a little bit. So I think all the doomer conversations about the world taking over the USA might not quite be as strong as everyone anticipated.
I agree 100%. The U.S. colleges have phenomenal players in them. The first 13, 15 picks could all be USA freshmen.
I don't think we get an international player till 20.
Okay. How about that?
Yeah.
Who is he, by the way? Just out of curiosity. You know?
I'm
okay.
I can't pronounce it.
Okay. Because I don't
want
know
to butcher it. I'll send you some film later on, coach. Okay. That's what's interesting about the draft. I saw a headline this week. I don't know if it was real. I don't know if it's fake. Because now with AI and everything, I can't tell if anything's real. But Darren Pearson contemplating playing one more year at college, which I think would be insane.
It was fake.
Oh, well, they got me. They got me good.
Yeah. He actually said, I really love college. I really do that. He was being nice. But he's got more feet out the door than you know what. But
well, hopefully his feet out the door don't get cramps on his way out. So no, I think that's enough for today, coach, don't you?
Yeah, or else we're going to get taken off the air. That was not an NBA 2K26 take on that.
All views are mine and mine only.
Yes.
We have to
have a disclaimer.
We appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll be back on Thursday with a special guest. So make sure you stay locked in for that. Subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts from. Check out the Coaching You podcast as well if you haven't. Coach does another podcast. He's cheating on me with his own podcast. How about that?
It's only about 10 years older than your podcast. but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, it's almost as old as me.
It's almost as old as you, yeah. So, I almost cussed. I don't like to cuss on my ears. I use every word you can use in the English language on my podcast. It's so X-rated, you know.
Yeah,
I have to play nice with the little kids in the UK, yes.
Can we just clarify? It's not an X-rated podcast. Some of the language is X-rated. The podcast is still about basketball.
Yeah, no, it's totally about basketball. My language is X-rated, yeah. It's time for me to go. It's time for me to go, Mo. Oh, Lord.
Till next time, my good people. Oh, and by the way, I do want to say a very important message. One of our dedicated listeners, Nad, is in hospital with some health conditions. Nad, we are praying for you, brother. We hope that you get well soon. We hope that you recover. Our thoughts and prayers are with you. So we appreciate also you listening to the podcast while you're in hospital.
Hopefully this hasn't given you a turn for the worse.
No. This should put a smile on his face. That's why we do this. We do this for the people. Much love to everyone out there listening. And until next time, get buckets.